G'day, Lisa. How are you doing?
Morning, Alex. I'm well, thank you.
That's good. Now, we were just talking a little bit about this off air. We're going to be talking about someone who has been a bit of a household name in Sydney, and especially if you were living in Sydney around the 1970s. And we have a lot to thank him for, right?
Yeah, we sure do. The person we're talking about is Jack Mundy. And he was a trade unionist, an activist, and an environmentalist. And he really did change the face of Sydney through the instigation of what are now known as green bans.
Right, green, that sounds, I mean, in my, 23-year-old mind, I'm thinking plastic bag bans.
That's a logical thing to think of, but this was actually building upon a tradition amongst trade unionists. So trade unionists would often, when they were concerned about conditions or so on, or were striking for better rates of pay or something, they would place a black ban on work or goods. So a black ban by the unionists, they would therefore mean that, like, they weren't going to move coal. Take, like, the wharfies would, who would all be in their maritime workers union, would take off other things, but they wouldn't handle coal, for instance. That was known as a black ban. But in the 1970s, the trade unionists, particularly in the construction industry, began to use the withdrawal of labour to really highlight their social responsibility. So they're thinking, okay, well, it's not just about us. What are we doing building all these really big skyscrapers, or why are we clearing this bushland when the locals don't want it? Like, is this what we should be doing for the community? And so trade unionists started arguing that workers had a right to insist that their labour not be used in harmful ways. Wow. And so in order to distinguish this sort of idea of the social responsibility of labour, they developed this concept and name, the green ban.
Right. So, playing off that black ban, but, different
color.
Happier color.
But giving that sort of idea of green being sort of environmental and sort of across the community and something that's good for the community. So Sydney was one of the first places in the world to have green bans, and there were three main types of green bans. There was those that were placed to defend open spaces from various kinds of development. There was green bans to protect existing housing stock from demolition to make way for freeways or high-rise development. And then there were green bans that were placed on older style buildings, which were there to sort of protect them as heritage buildings and stop them from being demolished for office blocks or shopping precincts.
And I mean, in Sydney, we know all too well how many, beautiful sandstone old buildings we have. So I guess I'm hoping anyway that I'm making the right jump here, that we probably, have the green bans to thank for that.
That's exactly right. So imagine Sydney without the rocks.
No.
You can't.
I don't think I will.
Yeah. And so they were saved by the green bans.
Wow.
And the same with Centennial Parklands.
Really? Even the Centennial Park? Well, I mean,
yeah,
I guess it's a big open space.
Centennial Park, they were looking to do other, hive off bits of it and put other development on it. And imagine that. I mean, during the last couple of years, especially the last year, we've all appreciated how important open space is for us.
Oh, absolutely.
So
and even
imagine
just a
that.
Bit of
or
green
what
in
about
the, cement.
The State Theatre? Have you gone to a gig at the State Theatre or gone to the Sydney Film Festival?
Yeah, of course. Wow.
So the State Theatre's been saved by a green ban.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, it was a really instrumental way of shifting the debate and supporting community grassroots activism by trade unionists. And one of the key groups was the BLF, the Builders Labourers Federation. And Jack Mundy became an active leader in the BLF. He was secretary of the New South Wales branch from 1968 to 1975. And so he really sort of led the drive to start applying these green bans and supporting communities who were trying to get a voice and fight back from developers and government interference in their local communities.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, I would imagine that if, you know, looking on not just from the history, but, you know, I would guess that, you know, there'd be inner city tenants at that point who had low, you know, rent that wasn't that expensive. You know, I would think anyway that maybe there'd be some kind of interaction between the green bands and them as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
So think about Woolloomooloo and also the Rocks. And also around Waterloo, all of those areas had green bans placed on housing, and it was all about trying to protect what we would now call affordable housing and ensure social equity for people that they could actually live in places close in the inner city, close to the shops, you know. And this movement saved many inner city tenants from eviction and whole communities from disruption and dislocation. The Glebe, the whole Glebe area, is another area that really benefited from green bans. That's the movement there helped stop the freeway being extended right through there. And in the end, some of the Glebe land, which had was connected to the church, was handed over to the state government for social housing. And it's interesting, a lot of these areas are now coming under pressure again.
Now, Waterloo, I mean, it's funny how history repeats, isn't it? But I wanted to look at Jack. I mean, where can we kind of follow Jack down this path, you know, post his time in the BLF?
Yeah, so he was a household name in the 1970s because of his work in the BLF and, you know, the strikes, and he was carried off sites and, you know, arrested and all sorts of stuff. But the green bans were highly politicised, and not everyone within the trade union movement agreed with this sort of move towards social responsibility as well. And so there was a lot of internal dissension, and it led to his expulsion from the BLF. It also actually ended up, the BLF were sort of expunged as a union. They weren't recognised as a union anymore, but it didn't stop his activism. So he actually got elected to Sydney City Council on a Communist Party ticket and represented resident action groups in the local council in Sydney City from 1984 to 1987. And after his political life sort of in local government, he also was really involved with the Australian Conservation Foundation, and he was a national councillor on their sort of, I guess, board for 11 years.
Mm.
And then in the mid-1990s, he was appointed chair of the New South Wales Historic Houses Trust.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering if he would have some interaction with them, considering all the work that he did.
Yeah. And so by then he was a real figurehead and an icon within the sort of heritage field. And so he was a great spokesman for the importance of historic houses and buildings and preservation of heritage to sort of to inform our understanding of the past and different ways of living. And in 2000, he was actually made an officer of the Order of Australia. So from going from, you know, union rat bag to officer in the Order of Australia, that is Jack Mundy.
Wow.
And he actually died last year in sort of the midst of all the other horrors that we experienced. And so there's actually going to be a state memorial service today to recognise his contribution to the community. And so that's being held at Sydney Town Hall. So that's why I decided to choose to speak about Jack Mundy today.
Well, I mean, it's not something that I would have kept an eye on or would have even considered, you know, because there's a live stream as well, right, kicking off at 11. And so it's not even something I probably would have, you know, known of or considered. But now I'm kind of like, oh, a bit emotional. Maybe I will, you know, like watch a live stream.
Look, you know, for those of you listening that can, I think it'll be a really interesting reflection on Sydney's history, actually, this memorial service. So you can watch it on live stream, and they will also be apparently recording it, and people will be able to watch back later. So I think it will be definitely one of those moments in Sydney's history. Yeah.
As always, Lisa, thank you very much for joining us here on 2SER.
Thanks so much, Alex.